Hi, my name is Chip Spear, and you're listening to Earth Plus 30. Welcome. Today's guest is a woman by the name of Sarah Goddard. I learned of Sarah through another organization called the Federated Conservationists of Westchester County. Sarah started an organization in Rye, New York to eliminate single-use bags. And though Sarah and her organization are technically not part of the Federated Conservationists of Westchester County, I never would have learned of her and her organization without their recommendation and their suggestion that I get in touch with her. The reason is that Sarah was incredibly successful in getting people in her town to coalesce around this issue of single-use bags being very destructive to the environment, very destructive to their community. You know, I'm sure that you understand that you see single-use bags or these plastic bags in our streets, in our creeks, in waterways, in our oceans, and just in fields and everywhere. People just don't get rid of them properly. They end up in the worst places, and they're very destructive to our environment. And I think Sarah offers a lesson to all of us on how to pull together an organization and how to get a community behind a problem like this in a very effective and not necessarily confrontational way. I certainly learned a lot from it, and I think that you will too. So with that, I want to introduce you to Sarah Goddard, a most remarkable woman.
Well, Sarah, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Sarah Goddard has been involved with an issue which is near and dear to my heart, not so much just for the specifics of single-use plastic bags and trying to remove them from our environment as much as possible, but the fact that we just across the board are using a number of different products that we really shouldn't be using. And we're trying to wean ourselves from these products. And Sarah, I think, has a really wonderful story that can be very educational for all of us. So with that, I want to welcome Sarah. And Sarah, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this really terrific effort.
Well, thank you, Chip. Thank you so much. I first became aware of the issue of the incredible proliferation of single-use disposable plastic bags about almost 10 years ago. And what happened was I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have been pretty involved with my community, Rye City, in a number of different ways. And one of the Rye City Council members, who was a friend of mine and a fellow volunteer, she approached me and she said, "Sarah, I think the city of Rye needs a sustainability plan." And I had no idea what a sustainability plan was. And I don't think she really knew herself. And I said, "Sure, that sounds great." So I joined the Conservation Commission, which is a municipal committee of the city of Rye. And I started to do some research on what exactly a sustainability plan entailed and what the purpose of it was. And it's really a blueprint for a community's economic, social, and environmental goals. And I had no idea how much work it would entail. A lot of municipalities and communities across the nation that have put together sustainability plans, they hire consultants or they set up departments to draft these very lengthy and involved plans. And what I did was I proposed to the city the creation of a committee, and it would be called the Rye Sustainability Committee. And I gathered up a number of volunteers and we got to work. And while we were working on drafting the Rye Sustainability Plan, we thought, why not take up an initiative? Just pick one. And one of the fellow committee members said, "What about plastic bags? It seems that they're everywhere and they don't seem to be terribly useful. And then I see them in trees or on the beach. And why don't we take a look and see if there's a way to reduce them or even get rid of them?" So I said, "That sounds like a great idea." And I went to Google, because that's what we all do, and did a Google search, plastic bag ban. And surprisingly, right here on the East Coast, a community, Westport, Connecticut, had recently passed the first plastic bag ban on the East Coast. And there was a reference to the legislator who had drafted and passed the law. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to call him. So I called him. Jonathan Kunitz is his name. And he was incredibly helpful. He came down to Rye and gave us sort of our marching orders and said, this is what you need to do if you want to start a campaign and ultimately pass your own piece of legislation. So that's what we did. And we actually were, I would say, unwitting in our knowledge of how much work it would take and how long it would take. But that's how we got started. And then from there, I'm happy to go through sort of the details of how we approached it. But it really sort of stumbled across our laps. And 8-9 months later, we had, I believe it was the fourth law on the East Coast at the time.
Maybe you can provide us with a sort of a high level view of what that plan was or what his suggestions were to approach this.
Sure. What he said and what I discovered to be true was you have to address the needs and reach out to three main groups within your community. The first are the residents, obviously. The second is the commercial group, the merchants. And then the third is the legislature. And I'm a city council member now, but at the time I was just the chair of a municipal committee. So I had no ability to pass any laws. I had to convince the legislature, the city council, which comprises the mayor and 6 city council members. I had to convince them of the efficacy of this law. So each approach to each one of these groups is very different. And we decided we would start with the merchant group. And what we did was we put together a pledge. And the pledge was very broad and generic. All it said was, I, business owner, blah, blah, pledge to reduce or eliminate completely my inventory of plastic bags because I recognize that they are a permanent contributor to waste in our environment. And the approach was deliberate in not referencing a hopeful law, so to speak, because we thought if we go to the city council and ask for this law to be passed and then it doesn't pass, we could go back to these business owners who've made this pledge and ask them to honor their pledge. So we started with the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, and we started with business owners whom we knew were supportive. And I actually created a pledge sheet that had a lot of lines that said name, the name of business, and email address and signature. So we started with, you know, Joe Smith at XYZ business who we knew would be supportive. So his name went first. Then we went to the next store, somebody else who we were pretty sure was supportive. And she saw that Joe Smith had signed. So she signed. And then we just went down the list and we chipped away. We had the list of virtually all of the businesses in the city of Rye. And we obtained signatures from, I believe at the time I did a pie chart for the public hearing, and I believe it was roughly 70% of the Rye businesses.
So could I sort of say that you've kind of started with friends and family, like many startups, and how they finance their initial offering is to go to friends and family and then build up some kind of momentum? Is that kind of similar?
That's exactly the approach. Yeah. And we did that with the businesses. And then we did it with the city council members. I started with those city council members who would absolutely vote for a ban. And then from there, I sat down with some of the city council members who were a little bit more reticent or had questions. And it was really useful because they had legitimate questions. They had legitimate concerns. And then I had the opportunity to do some research or ask around from communities that had passed similar laws and say, well, what did you do in this situation? Is this a problem? And then I could report back. So there was a lot of back and forth. The one other thing I would like to add about the merchant group was there was a particular concern on the part of locally owned businesses, specifically delis. These are owners of small businesses, and they were very concerned that if there was a switch to paper or if plastic was eliminated, they would not be able to pay for the paper bags that are actually more expensive. So, and then the other thing that they were concerned about was that people would go elsewhere. So if you're, you know, Joe Smith, who always goes to a deli in Rye, that you might just go next door to Harrison, or you might go to Portchester because, you know, you really need your plastic bag. And this was a legitimate concern. So it really is the economics of it. It's a concern over what's going to happen to our economy. Are we going to have to shutter our doors because now plastic bags are banned and we're paying more for paper and people will be shopping elsewhere? So these were two very serious, legitimate concerns. And these were also concerns that were raised by the city council members because they had heard from their constituents.
Let's just say you're a deli owner and you're buying a sandwich or a couple of sandwiches and got a plastic bag versus a paper bag. What is the actual cost to a customer or to the business between those two options?
If I remember correctly, the paper bags cost three times more than plastic bags. But we have to keep in mind two things. First of all, the ban was accompanied or is still accompanied with an education, outreach, and awareness campaign. Still, to this day, Rye Sustainability is educating and reaching out to the community about the need to reduce our dependence on single-use disposables, including plastics, but also straws, cutlery, all of these things that we really have no need for. I remember you saying that at the top of this conversation that we shouldn't have these items, but it's even more than that. It's that we don't need these items. We don't need these disposable items because we actually have wonderful alternatives. We have paper straws. We have cloth bags. We have stainless steel or even bamboo cutlery that we can just pop in our bag when we need to, you know, eat lunch at work or kids at school. There's so many ways in which we can use durable, reusable items and not have to rely on these single-use disposables that pollute our environment forever. So what I did was I put together to address these concerns, these legitimate concerns that the business owners had, I put together a questionnaire, and we took the questionnaire and split it up among four of us. And we called deli owners and businesses in quote unquote bag towns. And these are towns that have already passed similar legislation. And we wanted to target those municipalities that were different from Rye, because one of the arguments was, well, Rye's so wealthy, you know, it's not a problem. You know, they'll have this ban and, you know, everything will be fine. So what we said was, let's do research on all of the municipalities across the country that have passed similar legislation, and let's literally cold call delis, shops, and ask them a series of questions. And the series of questions included things like has the legislation, has the law been a problem for your business? Have you noticed a reduction in customers? Have you noticed people complaining? Have you found it difficult? Have you found it difficult financially? Are you suffering financially as a result of this law? And as you can imagine, nobody had a problem with this law. It was more about the anticipation and the anxiety about the unknown more than the actual facts of what happened once the law was passed. So we compiled the results of all of our interviews and we put it together into a sort of summary. It was a summary for the merchants, and I delivered it to the head of the Chamber of Commerce, and she distributed it electronically. But we also walked around and delivered them paper versions to some of the more relevant stores, just to assuage their concerns. And that seemed to be very effective.
Tell me about an example or two of a store that was against it, and after reading all this information that you had gathered, changed their mind and what they said to you.
So we had one deli owner who actually came to the first public hearing, and she voiced the concerns that I just outlined. And after I spoke with her personally, and also then subsequently delivered the summary to her, she was fine with it and did not speak out against it again. So that was, that was one instance that I can recall. We did, as I said, we contacted delis in a variety of municipalities. One of the municipalities was Brownsville, Texas. And, that city, I believe, is one of the poorest. It's in Texas. And I talked to a deli owner there and he said, no, it's never been a problem.
I was just going to ask about that because we think, it's just obviously these rich New York suburbs or towns that are close to New York or Connecticut or in the liberal Northeast. Of course, they're going to go along with that. They've got a lot of money. Those people don't really care. But maybe there's something about poorer towns where you get much more pushback. Has that been the case? Or tell me what you know about that.
I can't speak to the specifics of every single municipality, but my observations have been that one of the main concerns, one of the main objections to a law of this type is economics and the fear that if you institute a law like this, then businesses are going to close and grocery stores are going to have to, shutter their doors. And, that's the end of that town. So it's a real concern that people have and that business owners have, but it's actually one that if we really do some investigating, it's pretty clear where that message is coming from. And there's a lot of spin from various plastic bag and industry related groups that really push to perpetuate that fear. And it's our job. It's Rise Sustainability's job. It's the environmental activists and advocates' jobs to reassure and educate and say that there's no evidence, none, that an economy, that a municipality has suffered economically or that businesses have suffered financially and have had to close down because of this type of legislation.
That's interesting. So the lobby for plastic bags, you're saying, has been pretty effective at scaring people. Political scare tactics. Oh, my God, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. And people seem to have responded to that in some of these towns that are pushing back, correct?
Yes. And there have been a couple of towns in Westchester that have been sued or have had the threat of suits from these type of organizations.
So explain a little bit about that. That would be a really interesting story.
One of the arguments is that if you are banning plastic bags, what about paper bags? Now you're saying, oh, there's going to be more usage of paper bags. And isn't that an environmental nuisance, or isn't that a detriment to the environment? And so if that's the case, maybe you have to go through an environmental procedure. It's called a CECRA, where it's extremely expensive, and the municipality has to justify this move from plastic to paper. But the argument that we had in response to that was, we're not saying that we want to move from plastic to paper. We're talking about moving from disposables to reusables. And we always spoke, and I'm just using a plastic bag ban as the sort of the lingo, but we always spoke of it as a reusable bag initiative, and that we were pushing for a reusable bag law, because that is first and foremost what the goal is. It's to move away from both disposable paper and plastic. In fact, when my college-aged boys come home from the grocery store with paper bags, I yell at them because I say, where are your reusable bags? Because neither is good. It's a waste, especially when you have a perfectly strong reusable bag that you can pop in the wash and put in the back of your car.
It's amazing to me how few people in many communities use reusable bags. I know I live in Bronxville, and I go to the supermarket, and I almost never see anybody with a reusable bag. It's really pretty unusual to me, because I lived in an area in Connecticut where many, many people did. So it's kind of odd. It's perplexing. So how is that education message getting out, and how successful not only were you, why you became successful, but what are the barriers in areas that are close to you that don't do reusables?
Sure. It's very interesting, your observations about Bronxville, because if we were to rewind and go back to Rye in 2010, I would say that it would have been the same situation. You would have seen everybody out with their plastic bags, nobody taking any reusable bags. And since our law was passed, there is a certain pride associated, first of all, with being the first in Westchester County, but also the fact that we care about our community and that we care about how it looks. One of the most compelling parts of our argument was that even in wealthy, pristine city of Rye, we are still inundated with plastic bags in our trees, on the beach, scattered across the road. And what we did was, a number of us went out just for an afternoon and took photos of any plastic bags that we happened across. And keep in mind that the city of Rye is extremely small. It's 6 square miles. And in the course of this afternoon, we came up with so many photos that we had to stop. And what I did was, for the public hearing, I had a PowerPoint presentation, and I, right after I explained the buildup of waste in our environment and also the woeful recycling rates in our country, I stopped and I said, I just want to take a minute or two to go through a photo slideshow of all of the plastic bags that we happened to take photos of. And that was very powerful because it brought it home. It became personal. And I really do believe the environmental movement, for lack of a better term, really needs to be personal. And I think people will act and people will take action when it's more personal to them. And that's why we actually had so much support from our residents who really, prior to this initiative, really didn't notice or it wasn't an issue for them. I don't want to say they didn't care. But what we did was we really tried to focus on fixing a problem that existed in Rye, and that all of us could fix this problem together, whether you were a business owner, whether you were a mom, or whether you happened to sit on the city council. And that's why, even in a town that really was quite traditional and conservative in its approach, the law passed unanimously.
That's pretty impressive. So, yeah. Do you know anything that's going on in any of the other Westchester towns that do not have this ban? Like, I think that Yonkers does not, and there have been efforts there to make changes, but there's pushback. Do you know their story?
Sure. I have talked over the last number of years to a wide variety of groups and legislators in various towns in Westchester and actually beyond. Some towns, it has been the easiest thing, and poof, all of a sudden, they've passed a law. In fact, Rybrook, which is right next door to us, passed a ban on their plastic bags plus the 10-cent fee on paper, which is really the ideal. We have just the ban, and I do agree with activists and experts who say that the combo ban and fee is ideal. But in Rye, at this point, the trend and the culture has been so transformed that I don't think, and I don't want to commit to saying I don't think we need it, but I would hazard that we probably don't need it.
Why is that?
Because I do think that people have changed their habits. Have they changed their habits completely? Probably not. So would it make sense to go back and do the fee on the paper? It could, or maybe we could approach it in a different way. So, or maybe we could wait until the county passes a law, or even the state. The state is mulling it over, although Cuomo is only considering a ban at this point, which I think from the state perspective is really lacking, because we really do need both a ban and a fee. That's what California has. California is the only state that has a statewide ban, and it has both ban and fee. So for new municipalities or for counties or states, the ban fee combo is excellent. New Jersey is also considering both a ban and a fee. Rybrook, as I mentioned, passed the ban and the fee. Hastings on Hudson, which is also in Westchester County and is over on the Hudson side, they passed a ban and a fee. And I believe that there are a couple others that did the ban fee combo. So there are a number of municipalities around Westchester. It has been sort of like a domino effect. Once Rye passed theirs, other municipalities got the courage or the confidence to follow along. We had, within the next year or so after we passed ours, we had Larchmont, and we had, I believe, the village of Mamaroneck, and I think that was it, next door to us. The town tried to, and they were threatened with a lawsuit. And so they're revisiting it now. So there are quite a few in Westchester, and now the county legislature is considering a countywide piece of legislation.
Are you involved in that at all?
A little bit. It's in draft form, and there's a bit of back and forth about the structure. And also there's talk of simply having it on county property and then having municipalities sign on. So, you know, it's not necessarily a countywide blanket piece of legislation. So if you're a municipality that was always against the passage of a law, then perhaps you wouldn't sign on. So, you know, there's more to be done, but it's a start. It's absolutely a start.
So what's next for you? You've been so successful with this, and you say, okay, now I've got to go on to the next what?
There's always something to be done.
That's why I'm asking. You were successful at this and laid out such a great program. So how do you target that to the next big thing?
Oh, we've been very busy. And when I say we, I slip back into my role as chair of Rise Sustainability. So after we passed that law, I believe it was a year or two later, we drafted the Rise Sustainability Plan, and it was adopted by the city council at the time. And then we also did a greenhouse gas emissions audit of the entire municipality. We have worked on a number of waste reduction campaigns, a straw reduction campaign, a cork recycling campaign, a healthy yard program, which has been very successful. We are currently working now. I am the liaison to the Rise Sustainability Committee, and I am helping the new chair and her group on putting together a food scrap recycling pilot program. We just got the approval by the council, which included myself, and now we're putting together the bits and pieces, and it is due to roll out in March.
That's very exciting. I think I mentioned in a previous conversation, just when I introduced myself to you, about this guy by the name of John Grant, who I did a podcast with earlier, one of my first podcasts, and he is out in Colorado and has been working a lot with food waste, and is really a fascinating guy, great program that they have. I think it's not too far. It might be in Fort Collins. Yeah. He's a really interesting
Maybe I'll take a look at that.
He at Harvard and has taught in a number of places and has been a consultant and whatnot, but got very involved most recently in food waste. And they've got some really interesting programs where they convert food waste into energy as one example and do a lot of really interesting things. So
sure. I'll definitely look into that. This has been our latest initiative. We are very excited about it, and we're going to have a curbside pickup component to it. So there'll be drop-off for those who want to bring it over to the Department of Public Works and drop off their food scraps. Or for the first 150 households that sign up, there will be a curbside component. And it's a 6-month pilot program. And then at the end of the 6 months, we will assess and see if we want to make it permanent.
The statistics that I've read say that there's up to 40% of waste in food.
It's unbelievable.
Truly.
Yeah. And to put it really is.
To get people more aware of that kind of thing also would be such a great success.
Yes.
I totally agree. Well, Sarah, this has been amazing. It's really fascinating, and you've really outlined a great program. I think it's applicable to a lot of other products that are similar and that other towns and cities all over the country, if not all over the world, are sort of confronting many of these same problems and trying to find a solution. So your approach, I thought, was great. The whole story about how you, you know, kind of went to friends and family businesses first and got them on board and approached the legislature in your town and got them to buy in. And you almost had a fallback position, right? Even if they didn't. So that's pretty encouraging and is a really great model of success.
And I think the other thing was that we really stressed the positive nature of it. I think sometimes, and now I'm going to be judgmental in saying this, so I'm going to be contradicting myself, but sometimes I find that we environmentalists, we can be a little bit judgmental and say, oh, this group is, you know, not doing enough, or that town, you know, has forgotten to do this. And I think if we approach the crisis of our day, climate change and the buildup of waste in our communities and all of the elements that go along with this seemingly insurmountable problem. But if we approach it together and we approach it as something that is not political, that it's merely about trying to preserve and conserve our communities, I think we'll probably get more buy-in from all types of people. I'm incredibly proud of my community for all that it's done in the last 10 years in terms of its sustainability efforts and accomplishments, and also its conservation accomplishments. And I think, you know, if each municipality and each community can approach these problems as a problem to tackle together,
I totally agree.
Can get accomplished.
I did a podcast with a woman who was a co-founder of an organization called Dear Tomorrow, and their approach on dealing with climate issues was all through personal storytelling. It was not statistically driven.
Mm-hmm.
It was writing letters to our children about the world we want to leave you. And it was all personal experience, personal stories about swimming in the clean water in a lake or in the neighborhood pond or the stream, and hoping you have the same joy of doing that that I do. Your approach and making it a very personal thing instead of scaring people and throwing out all these statistics, I think is a very effective way to go about solving this problem and getting people together, because it's not like a red-blue issue. It's not a poor, a rich or poor issue or any other
exactly.
thing. It's like we want our community to be really beautiful, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that to me seems to be a very, very effective approach, positive and collective. And that has enabled us to pursue a wide variety of different initiatives and projects. And we can't do it on our own. We have had to enlist the support and the help of our fellow residents and groups from other towns and other states. So I see it as a deeply personal and collective endeavor. And you know, I hope that you know, it'll just sort of snowball across the county and who knows, maybe across the country at some point.
Sarah, I want to thank you so, so much for taking the time to join me in this podcast.
Thank you so much.
It's been truly wonderful. It's been a great conversation. And I hope that I get a chance to actually meet you in person. You live not that far away.
That would
so
be wonderful.
Something. Anyway, thank you again.
Thank you.
And I hope to see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening today. Do you have an idea for a podcast? Let me know. Visit my website. You can contact me there or send me an email at chip@earthplus30.com. Until next time, this is Chip Spear.